You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Joe Connison, editor-in-chief of the National Memo, author of Hunting of the President, and now the excerpted Hunting of Hillary, to, I guess, educate some of the youngins around here about what we can anticipate in the months and years, perhaps, ahead, and from whence it came in regards to Hillary Clinton and the Clintons. Also on the program today, Joe Biden. Joe Biden, not going to be running for the presidency. Comes as shocking news, since Dick Morris had already told us that he was going to. And Dick Morris is never, ever wrong.
Uncanny.
Meanwhile, Paul Ryan, it appears, is caving on his demands to the Freedom Caucus.
They said, so it begins.
We'll vote for you, but we don't agree to any of your stipulations. Which puts Paul Ryan in the awkward position of having to pretend like they're agreeing to his stipulations. Which puts Paul Ryan essentially in the position of the outgoing Speaker of Bonaire when he was outgoing. Should be interesting to see what happens. Also, more Volkswagen cheating. Or I should say it's more extensive than they had thought. We have polls, but not much has changed in these races. One poll, I guess, showing that Ben Carson's doing a little better in Iowa than Donald Trump. But nationally, it's still Trump and Carson. And you have really Jeb Bush just becoming more and more desperate to sound like it really is a situation with Jeb Bush where it's like, the guy goes to the beach, and he thinks he's Mr. Universe. He gets some sand kicked in his face and realizes that he's the 90-pound weakling. Now, all of this stuff I'm referencing is really, I think, sort of dated.
Pre-Charles Atlas makeover.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought I was Charles Atlas, Matt, but I guess I'm confused.
Do you even know what I'm talking about? Like,
but that's pre-you, Sam. Like, that isn't that like, yes, from like the 60s or,
yes,
something?
Yes, but I was aware of it because it was still sort of, there were vestiges around here. But there was like a thing where you would, in the back of comic books, actually, even as I was a kid, maybe it was comic books, I think it was, there was all this stuff about like skinny guys trying to bulk up because they were getting sand kicked in their face at the beach. Did you, I mean, does that like any of that resonate with you?
I was never much of a comic book guy.
All right. Your face. I think you just got atlased right there, loser.
I mean, I can't tell. You know, it's like you can't tell if that reference. I don't see much of that around anymore. But Jeb Bush is like that guy, And now he's desperately trying to sound cooler or hipper. And it's even worse than when I try and sound that way.
See, I just have an image, though, of Jeb as he is, just sort of loping around, and then, like, Trump with just, like, a giant gut hanging over some, like, Bermuda shorts, kicking sand in his face.
I saw
being like, hey, your
the...
Mexican wife looks terrific. Why don't you come out with me, honey? I'll treat you better than he ever could.
I didn't dig into this, but apparently the guy who wrote Back to the Future said that Biff guy was based on Donald Trump, and
that's a little more self-made.
Yeah, but the amazing thing is that in that movie, you actually, you know, you feel sympathetic to Firefly or whatever the guy's name is. What is it? Marty McFly.
Firefly.
Whatever. Look, I haven't seen the movie in years. So you feel sympathetic and some empathy with Marty McFly. And in this case, actually, I'm cheering for the bullet.
You just say, hey, Biff, take him for a ride.
Exactly.
Do it again.
And frankly, the bully has far more empathy, it seems to me, for people than even, I mean, he's a racist bully. But he loves everybody.
He's like, hey, McFly, that's really not a cool way to treat people. I'm going to give you a swirly.
Yeah, exactly. It's unbelievable to watch this. And meanwhile, we've been watching the Benghazi committee, and this is really more like Flopghazi or Ben Flopsy. I mean, this hearing, boring. And frankly, you know, I don't know, maybe they're saving... Maybe they're waiting until, like, prime time, until they bring out the big guns. Like, they figure, let's just see if we can take her on this committee for 9 hours. And maybe at 5 p.m. today they come out with something. But really, basically, it's amazing to watch the committee opens up and Trey Gowdy is having to justify this committee years later. Years later, they've been investigating this for 5 years now. They've spent millions of dollars, and Gowdy has to open up the hearing with a full justification as to the existence of this committee. Not where they wanted to be on this. And, you know, it's interesting, in the conversation, and I pre-recorded this conversation with Joe Connison yesterday, so we're not commenting directly on these hearings, although there was an aspect of the Benghazi thing. And people should, I want to be clear about something. This is not about being in any way an apologist for Hillary Clinton. None of Hillary Clinton's policy positions are at stake here. And, you know, I think it's people are, I think, are fairly aware of my not being thrilled with Clinton policies, both from the first administration and I think, you know, from her perspective, from, you know, where she is now. I mean, I find her a little bit too hawkish on, you know, to the extent that we've seen what she's doing. I found her too hawkish. I was upset about the bankruptcy bill vote. It goes on and on. But what's really fascinating about this, and one, is that people don't understand the history. Younger people don't understand the history of the 90s. And it was just a bizarre time leading through, I would say, until... Really, I mean, 2008, but you could still see the vestiges of it. And what I think you'll find interesting about the Connison interview is to see the impact that the right-wing media had in the 90s and, frankly, in the first half of this, what has passed so far in this century, and how at one point, the relationship between the conservative media and the mainstream media was severed, or at the very least, choked. There was the pipeline was not fully cut off, but it was significantly diminished, and in large part from the rise of in my estimation of the liberal netroots that has morphed over the years. But And it's fundamentally changing the dynamic now where you have, and I don't want to, we'll save this for the interview because I don't want to go over the same information that we talk about in the interview. We're going to be talking to Joe Connison. Like I say, I recorded this yesterday and I think you'll enjoy it. But before we do, does this sound familiar to anybody? Kelly, do you eat seafood? Do you go to seafood restaurants? Yes? No? You don't go to seafood restaurants? Well, you go to restaurants and they serve seafood, right?
Kelly loves it. I don't know why she's getting all shy.
She's getting very shy about seafood. Well, I understand, Kelly, because you can look over the menu, right? Right? Is that what you do? You don't have to nod. Oh, yes, yes. And the seafood sounds delicious, but you ask yourself, Kelly, will my order hurt our planet? Well, eating wild seafood guilt-free means sorting out the rights, wrongs, and the downright scary of the seafood industry. I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, Kelly. But we're here to help. And by we, I mean Oceana. It's a new kind of conservation group dedicated to saving the oceans while feeding the world. Visit oceana.org/majority report to join the campaign to bring back healthy wild fish to your plate and to dinner tables all over the globe. Join now. We'll send you a copy of our book, The Perfect Protein. It includes sustainable recipes from top chefs and an easy guide for how to eat seafood responsibly. Matt, do you cook at home? No. Okay, great. Well, someday you will. And so if you join now, Matt, you'll get the copy of The Perfect Protein. Find out what wild seafood to order or how to prepare it, Matt, so you can keep enjoying the food you love while protecting the planet we share.
Mm.
That's oceana.org/majority report. You know, Michael, seafood goes great with Fumé Blanc, which I know is
your
favorite one.
You're looking at me like I don't know that.
Right.
Crazy.
Use the offer code today. Help save the oceans while feeding the world. That's oceana.org/majority report. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, my interview I recorded yesterday with Joe Connison. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome, and it has been far too long, the great Joe Connison. He is the editor-in-chief of NationalMemo.com and author of, several books, but the latest is a free book, ladies and gentlemen, Hunting of Hillary, which is, Joe, these are excerpts from, and have they been updated from the 2000 book that you and Gene Lyons did on the hunting of the president?
So, yes, and it's a pleasure to be back with you, Sam. You know, Gene and I looked at what was happening in this election cycle, and we decided that lots of people would hear about Clinton scandals and would hear that, Hillary Clinton had been involved in something called Whitewater, and would have no idea what any of that meant. And worse than that, that the mainstream media and certainly the right-wing propaganda machine would cast all that in a very bad light that we didn't think was appropriate based on, our earlier reporting. So Gene and I approached the publisher of The Hunting of the President. We said, look, we'd like to excerpt the parts that are relevant to Hillary Clinton from our book, which was a national bestseller in 2000, and, present that to the public in an e-book now, in the most usable current format for free. And they generously agreed to do that, even though the book is still in print. And that's what we did. We pulled out the stuff that was most relevant to her from the whole Whitewater investigation. And I know you remember that, Sam, because you're a geezer like me almost.
Yes.
And we added a new introduction that sort of sets it in the context of the current moment and the Benghazi committee and the other the emails and the other so-called scandals that have been dogging her over the last several months. And we also added, just for fun, an appendix, Where Are They Now? So that once you kind of understand who the dramatis personae are in the old Clinton scandal narrative, you can see what happened to them, which in many cases is pretty funny. I mean, for instance, Kenneth Starr, who was the independent counsel appointed by Republican judges to investigate Whitewater, who botched it so badly, has, among other things, represented Jeffrey Epstein, the accused pedophile billionaire.
Right.
So there are things like that, and it's quite a lot of fun.
All right,
and
well,
it's free.
Let's,
as we said.
It is required reading in this office, and you know, as I told you when I sent you an email, you know, yesterday, the names McDougal's came up, and even we on this program still talk about. You know, the whole Vince Foster thing, which and on some level, like, you know, there are sort of different levels of this. And I don't want to spend too much time. But to talk about that era, it really has been one insane era after another in many respects. And I want to talk also about the sort of the difference, because it doesn't have the same. These things don't work as well as they did then. You know, what is amazing to me is, you know, we've got a couple of I've got producers who are working who are in their 20s. We pulled a clip from Dana Loesch. This was like, a couple months ago or something, where she was talking to one of the FCC commissioners who was going around in the net neutrality fight. None of this stuff is relevant, except for the fact that at one point she just said to him, "You got to be careful. They may Vince Foster you." And talking about the administration, and left it at that. And the thing is that the vast majority of Americans would have absolutely no idea what that means. But there
Dana Loesch,
there
Dana Loesch, I guess for listeners who may not know, is a particularly nutty Tea Party person, and I guess radio personality.
Yes, but she's like in her 20s or 30s. I mean, the point is that there's an entire subculture out there where her saying that word, Vince Foster, as a verb, means a whole sort of like, it opens up this whole sort of, you know, like this, it's if you went through this cave and you get it to the other side and all of a sudden it opens up and it's like that sort of green, you know, sort of like leprechaun world, except for in this case, it's just like a much darker conspiracy filled world where there's an entire new sort of set of laws about physics and gravity. And it's just insane. But there's a huge percentage of the population that knows exactly what she's talking about, and it really is what you cover in your book.
Yes. So, just for the readers or listeners, I'm sorry, who do need to be schooled about this, Vince Foster was the White House counsel in 1993 when Bill Clinton took office in the White House for his first term. He was an old friend of the Clintons from Arkansas. Totally upright, upstanding lawyer, as far as anybody knew. And very sadly, he killed himself. He shot himself with a gun in Fort Marcy Park on the other side of the Potomac from Washington, and left a suicide note in which he seemed to blame the Wall Street Journal for making up lies about the Clintons. And immediately, or very soon, the right wing came up with all kinds of conspiracy theories that basically tried to implicate the Clintons in his death, especially Hillary Clinton. She was said to be his lover, even though she was also said to be a lesbian. You know, there were all kinds of theories. He knew too much about Whitewater, which was this land deal in which they had actually lost money, but this was there was a big attempt to make that seem like some kind of crooked deal that they had foisted on the public somehow. And this just went on, and the theories got crazier and crazier. You know, Rush Limbaugh went on the radio and said there was a source who said there was proof that Hillary had been had somehow moved Vince Foster's body. And I mean, just we go through all of this in the book, and it's fascinating. It's an amazing story. There's tremendous, I'm sorry to say, culpability on the part of mainstream media organizations that allowed this to fester in a way, and of course in the right wing, which helped create it and stir it up and keep it going in the first place. And the Republicans in Congress, much as today, were all too eager to try to use this kind of material to bring down Clinton's presidency. And when they gained control of the House in 1994, the 1994 midterm, it gave them every opportunity to do that. And basically Newt Gingrich said, I'm going to have 20 congressional committees investigating the Clintons. And he almost did. They investigated. They would make up or investigate made-up stories about all kinds of stuff. There was a story that I think we discuss tangentially in the new book, certainly in the old book, about a place called Mena Airport in Arkansas. Do you remember Mena Airport, Sam?
Yes, this is where all the drugs came in, right?
Supposedly there was a guy named Barry Seal who was flying drugs in there. There are others, supposedly, too, who were flying cocaine in there from Mexico. And that Clinton was supposedly knew about this, and the CIA was involved, and George H.W. Bush, who he defeated in the election, and it had a sort of surface plausibility if you know anything about the CIA's involvement with
right.
drug smuggling.
Right.
Past. But in fact, you know, it was completely debunked. It was wrong. I don't think Clinton even knew about it. This was a federal matter. So, but that was actually a congressional committee led by a relatively harmless, moderate Republican named Jim Leach from Iowa that pursued this thing for months and months, trying to show something. And this because it was the party policy to make up and exploit and if necessary, fabricate whatever could be put together to bring down the Clintons. And, you know, so we see
there was Travelgate,
a similar
situation
right?
now. There was
Travelgate.
Yeah, tell us about Travelgate. I mean,
In Travelgate, there was a real suspicion of corruption in the White House Travel Office, which is an office that arranged travel for the press when they were traveling with the president. And there were all kinds of things that were going on there. They were bringing in, they were letting correspondents bring in, you know, Persian rugs without paying customs on them. They were fiddling with the money in the travel office accounts. You know, the head of the travel office had moved $50,000 into his own personal account. And Hillary Clinton and others in the White House, including George Stephanopoulos and other people, said, this is no good. We have to clean this up. And that they fired them abruptly. They fired four people from the travel office. And this became a big scandal because the press did not like this to be
right.
interfered with.
Right.
And one of the travel office officials was prosecuted federally. And Sam Donaldson, actually, of ABC News, actually appeared for him as a character witness. So the idea that the press could cover this, neutrally was completely ridiculous. And in any case, I wrote about this for the Columbia Journalism Review, how bad the coverage of this was. But that was one story. So Travelgate, supposedly somehow Hillary or some relative of Hillary or some relative of Bill Clinton was going to get something out of this. And there was never anything to that either. Then there was Filegate. And Filegate was an accusation that the Clintons had somehow abused the lists of employees in the White House to try to purge or damage Republicans and looked at their FBI files. And as it turned out, if you actually looked at the list of people whose files were ever reviewed or even pulled, they were people like, the White House gardener. And they were not, it was not a political
thing
at all.
Well, Joe, you know how much those gardeners know. I mean, they're constantly
exactly.
watching
they
what's going on.
So, yeah. So, but, you know, what was amazing to me in that period was how little, our colleagues in the mainstream actually paid attention to the details of these stories. Because once you started to look at the accusation and try to put it in context of any facts, like the list of the names in Filegate, for instance, which I looked at, all of them, it was very clear that the accusation was completely made up. There was nothing there. And that is, the reason we did this reworking of the book was to say the same thing is going on now. Whatever you think about Hillary Clinton, her politics, I don't endorse anybody. I was very critical of her in 2008 on foreign policy grounds and other things. But there is an attempt, again, to damage her, demonize her, using taxpayer funds in a congressional committee, specifically the Benghazi committee, and which is conducting its hearings, and it's a replay. It's a replay.
It's, you know, it's fascinating because, you know, look, I remember where I was on the day that Bill Clinton won his election in 92, I guess it was. And I wasn't terribly thrilled. I was relieved to have George Herbert Walker Bush. I was in, I remember exactly where I was, in Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco. But what happened after that, and even through the years, is really fascinating because in some respects, right, there, I think, and I want to sort of get a little bit meta and take a step back as to like sort of like ask a little bit like why we didn't see, there was definitely obviously the attempts. I mean, Benghazi started out as sort of as Obama's scandal. And I think when they realized, like, you know, when Mitt Romney had it handed to him on a platter, or I should say had his buttocks handed to him on a platter in national television talking about it, I think they realized, like, hey, you know, let's go to plan B. And this becomes Hillary Clinton's scandal. The fascinating thing
of course,
is,
you know, they instantly, they lost the election 2 months after Benghazi occurred. It was September 11th, 2012, and 2 months later after, you have to say that Mitt put the real college try into it. It flopped and actually turned back on him in the debate, and Obama won big, and then it was time to move on to 2016. And who is there for 2016, but potentially Hillary Clinton.
Oh, and I think they knew that from the beginning, too. Like, this is going to have this, we're going to be able to, this is going to have multiple purposes for us at that time. But what fascinates me is that, and look, I remember these days in the 90s. I would read you in the New York Observer. I would meet you years later, but I would read you constantly at that time. And I was not necessarily a huge fan of the Clintons, but it was, the media's being so enabling this, the
right.
mainstream media enabling this. I mean, I listened to a lot of Limbaugh at that time, so I was sort of aware what was going on. You could watch it filter into the mainstream media, and frankly, to a large extent, I think I'm sitting in this seat in part because of the way the media acted during that era. And it was like, you know, the emergence of blogs and just sort of like another mechanism in which to sort of say, hey, this is not right. Like this, like yeah. this does not hold up. And in some ways, I think that's, we're seeing, they're doing the exact same thing they did back then. It's just not as effective because.
Well, it's not as effective for a lot of reasons. You know, I have to say, Sam, I remember years ago we were at Netroots Nation, and you looked at me and you said, "You're the godfather of the blog."
Yeah.
Because I was going up against the Wall Street Journal and all those guys back then in the Observer and also in Salon, and on these issues. And but that, thankfully, you know, it's not so lonely anymore. There's really a lot of sort of media infrastructure now. A lot more pushback on this than there used to be, and the result is that when they try to do something like the Benghazi Committee, which is you know, a low-down move of this kind, they get pushed back, and in fact, their mistakes actually and their bad faith become, you know, known to the public in a
right.
way that was not true back then, and that is a great thing, and it's because of social media and people like you and you know, a lot of you know, kind of reinforcements that have arrived on the scene in the last 10 years or so. So
I actually think what we're seeing in the presidential election is actually is directly related to that, because it's almost as if they create these conspiracy theories now, and when they try and infect, basically, let's just call them normal people, the mainstream media, it gets pushed back because there's immediate accountability. I mean, you know, and we'll talk about this latest Trey Gowdy story, because, you know, you've written about it in the National Memo. I saw Brian Beutler wrote about it in the New Republic, and others have commented on this. I think and Digby writes about it. And what happens is, there is a narrative that actually makes it embarrassing for a guy like Michael Isikoff, you know, who's a perfect example of this stuff, to repeat these lies, because then all of a sudden there is an equally loud voice saying, like, hey, wait a second, you didn't do your homework. And so what happens is it almost creates this sort of glass ceiling, if you will, for this conspiracy theories and these the lies, frankly, and it hermetically seals it off. And so it's like these guys are now living in their own biosphere, and what's happening, what's growing in there is things like Donald Trump, right? I mean, because people forget, yeah, Donald Trump is now the leader. He was the birth truther in chief for four That's years correct. In this country. And That's it's amazing. Correct. It's amazing.
That's correct. It's amazing. Well, you know, this goes to the sort of, I would say, mental deterioration of the Republican base, who, you know, can no longer cope with real yeah. facts and live in a fantasy world about many issues. But, you know, as far as the Benghazi committee is concerned, you know, what you're saying is completely right, because, you know, they had captured the New York Times for a while. They were putting out stories about Hillary Clinton, the most notorious one being the so-called criminal referral story last summer,
mm-hmm.
where the Times published a story saying, you know, that she had been criminally referred to the Justice Department for some disclosure of classified information in her emails and so on. And that turned out to be completely wrong. But in the
And they
past,
had to walk it back.
Yes. In the past, back in Whitewater days, the Times was doing much the same thing, and they were not... You know, there wasn't enough pushback to get them to change anything. Now, the New York Times has started to investigate the Benghazi committee's misconduct.
Right.
They had an editorial calling for the committee to be shut down a couple of weeks ago. And but this is all because of the pushback.
Definitely.
And yeah. it's very, very important. Now, the latest story is really funny. And I urge people, I think Brian's piece is very good. I go into a little more of the factual detail about this. But basically, the right wing and, to some degree, the mainstream got very exercised last week. And you mentioned Isikoff, although he's actually done a better job on this than a lot of others, ultimately, reporting that Hillary Clinton was in a lot of trouble because one of her emails from Sidney Blumenthal, her old friend and advisor, mentioned the name of a Libyan CIA source. And that Trey Gowdy, the chairman of the Benghazi committee, said his life had been endangered, and this was the revelation of the most secret kind of, secrets that the government holds, and how could the Secretary of State have done this, and she passed on classified material when she said she hadn't, and on and on. You look more closely, and you find out pretty soon that the CIA never told them that this was classified, this guy's name. His name, by the way, is Moussa Koussa. And he is the former intelligence chief of Libya. He was for a time the foreign minister towards the end before he defected to the West and left Gaddafi.
Joe, just to be clear, let me just make it yeah. clear to people. So Trey Gowdy is holding up an email, and it's from Sidney Blumenthal to Hillary Clinton. Sidney Blumenthal says, hey, I'm making reference. I'm talking about somebody, Moussa Koussa, who is the head of Libyan intelligence.
At that time, he was still in Libya. This is 2011 when this email is sent. It's so, just before he leaves the country, March 2011.
Trey Gowdy holds it up, metaphorically speaking, and says...
And he's talking about it as if it's a national tragedy, that this guy's name has been revealed in this email, and it should have been classified, and on and on. And it turns out it was never classified by the CIA, and there's a good reason for that. You know why? Because Moussa Koussa's name was first discussed, as far as I can find out, in a book by George Tenet, the former CIA director, in 2007, who went into great detail about how this guy Moussa Koussa, who, by the way, was the main suspect in the Lockerbie bombing of the Pan Am 103, had turned and become a CIA asset. So, of course, the CIA, when George Tenet, the director, former director, writes a book about his career, the CIA goes through every line of that book, don't they? And they tell him what he can say and what he can't say. And they clearly felt it was okay to talk about Moussa Koussa. You know why? Because everybody knew he had been working with the CIA. This had been discussed in the press. So
now, this is not to exonerate George Tenet for a host of other issues.
I'm just talking about right. the fact that the ridiculousness of Trey Gowdy trying to make it sound as if some valiant, you know, CIA source or officer had been endangered by the nefarious Hillary Clinton and Sidney Blumenthal, when in fact this is a guy who everybody has known was working for the CIA for, you know, 10 years.
But even more relevantly, the CIA reviewed this specific email, right? I mean, so it wasn't like the Trey Gowdy, like he didn't do his homework. It was also like the CIA had already reviewed that. He must have known that.
You have to, well, you have to also, I mean, the other funny part is that when the State Department turned this email over to Gowdy, they had erased Moussakoussa's name just to protect his privacy or something like that. They wanted to make sure that the classification stuff was all done. But they forgot to erase his name in the email subject line. And then Trey Gowdy, his brilliant staff, when they released it, they also forgot to erase the name for the subject line. So they are the actual people who released the guy's name again to the public. Not Hillary Clinton, who had this in her private email server, not Sidney Blumenthal, who sent an email thinking innocently that he's a private citizen communicating with his friend, the Secretary of State. It's these guys who end up releasing the name. And, of course, no harm was done because everybody knew this guy was in the CIA. And, in fact, you know, it blows my mind in a way that Trey Gowdy and the Republicans are so eager to protect the identity of the guy who probably blew up Pan Am 103. I mean, this is not a good person.
But wait a second.
Guy,
but didn't,
who switched sides, you know. So,
but didn't Gowdy's committee also redact his name? Didn't they?
Yes.
My understanding,
oh, yes.
Because this part, this part right here is a part. Now, we should say one thing. Trey Gowdy was he? I believe he was a federal prosecutor. Is that right? Or was he?
No, he was a local.
Okay.
He was a local prosecutor.
This guy was a former prosecutor, and he, it seems to me, is fabricating evidence here. Like, I mean,
yes.
This to
so
me
let's
is
explain.
Okay.
Let's
yeah.
Explain
go
what
ahead.
You mean by that. So when I say the name was left in the subject line, that was a stupid mistake. But in the text of the email, Gowdy, when it was released to the press, had blacked out Moussakoussa's name and put in something like to protect sources and methods.
Redacted due to sources and methods. Methods.
Right, which is a CIA phrase. It's a phrase that you would use if you were trying to make it look as if the CIA had itself
redacted it.
Blacked out the name, correct. So, so on the other day, Elijah Cummings, who's the ranking Democrat on the Benghazi committee, sent a letter to Gowdy saying, "You blacked out this name and tried to make it look as if it was the CIA to hype your supposed discovery of this email." And in fact, that's apparently what happened. So.
So let me just be clear
Gowdy,
on what
Gowdy had some answer to that, but you know it will be interesting to see what happens because you're right. This is, you know, there's actually a federal statute that makes it a criminal offense to deceive the Congress, even for a member of Congress, if they do this in the course of an investigation.
So just to be clear,
1996.
I just want people to understand what's gone on here. The CIA looks at the document and says there's no problem. The State Department says we're going to take it out. Just to be fair, they accidentally leave it in. Gowdy gets in there. He redacts it, makes it appear as if the CIA had redacted it, which would substantiate his claim that this email contained classified information that the CIA would not want released. But he
Correct.
Did the redacting and pretended. And that is just...
That's what it looks like now. I mean, I'm still sort of trying to report this out and make sure that all these facts are correct. There's some issues on the timeline of when people knew what was and wasn't classified in any of these emails. But it seems clear to me that somebody in the committee put that redaction on there and were trying to deceive the public.
Do they hold this? Let me ask you this, Joe, because I'm not, you know, I don't get down to D.C. Do they hold, does the staff work in the Breitbart offices or do they actually have their own office?
You know, that's a good question. I haven't visited the majority staff offices of the Benghazi committee. It would be interesting to know where they work. They got very offended when I wrote a piece for Politico over the summer, which said that they had been leaking stuff to the New York Times because, of course, they shouldn't be leaking anything, and they've declared that they aren't. And they asked Politico to withdraw my story or correct it. And then I wrote back to them explaining why. why I thought they had leaked, and we never heard from them again. So, so my communications with them have been intermittent, let's say. But it's kind of an amazing story, and I guess, you know, we'll see, you know, what they do going forward. The Democrats have said they may quit the committee. There are even Republicans who I think are beginning to feel that this has turned into a big albatross for them and risks the kind of backlash that we've seen in the past when they impeached Bill Clinton.
Right.
You remember, Sam, that in 1998, when they voted to create the impeachment committee, the aftermath of that was an unprecedented loss of Republican seats in the House in a midterm, which should not have happened at the end of Bill Clinton's second term, and the defenestration, we could say, of Newt Gingrich as speaker. Also kind of similar to things that have been happening lately. He was kicked out. Then they tried to put in Robert Livingston, and he turned out to be having an affair with somebody, so they couldn't do him.
That's a very awkward position to be in when you're trying to prosecute a president for having an affair, and then it comes out that you had one yourself.
Yeah, and now we have Kevin McCarthy accused of having an affair with somebody. I mean, you know, there are echoes and echoes, and we go into this in the introduction to The Hunting of Hillary, where we discuss, you know, what's the same, what's different now, and why.
Well, that's the thing.
All of this stuff from the past is still relevant.
Well, you know, that's the thing, is that I'm seeing this less as a repeat and really as the same story. And the only thing that has changed in the course of this narrative that really started, I think, in the early 90s, which was the first era post-Reagan and also the first era of the stripping of the Telecommunications Act, thank you, Bill Clinton, that allowed for sort of a new mechanism that was dominated by the right, that being a talk radio. And
right,
you can really, you know, and this is the thing why I am making it mandatory for my producers in this office to read, at the very least, The Hunting of Hillary. And I may bring in my own copy of Hunting the President for these guys, because this is, I think, part of one long narrative. The change is, and, you know, I said it, I really do think that you inspired a lot of people who were who had no other source of media to go out and create their own blogs in the early aughts. Because I think that's what's changed, is that their stuff now does not travel into the mainstream media the way that it used to, because those people in the mainstream media are held accountable. And so now it's sort of bouncing back on them. And it's almost as if like they're suffering from their own sort of like global warming, where their own production is really in some ways slowly killing them.
You're right. I mean, I it's very kind of you to say that. I did my best, and I think the fruit of all of this is that it's all really contested terrain now, which is a much healthier situation for our country.
Joe Connison, always a pleasure to talk to you. It's nationalmemo.com. We'll put up a link to that, and we're going to put up a link to the free ebook of Hunting of Hillary, and it is required reading, because, you know, get used to it, folks. Like I say, the only difference is that this is stuff I think is going to end up hurting the right more, and anything that hurts the Republicans, you know, metaphorically speaking, I think is very healthy for the country. Joe Connison, thanks so much.
Thank you, Sam. It was a pleasure, as always.
All right, folks, that's the... as the Benghazi hearings continue and the Republicans continue to score some political hay on this issue. I mean, there are, I think, you know, sort of broader foreign policy questions surrounding Benghazi that some of which implicate Hillary Clinton, some which don't. But we won't hear any of those conversations. Because it's far more important that there's some nefarious reason as to why the Clinton State Department as opposed to the Obama administration. 3 years ago, it was the Obama administration. Now it's the Clinton State Department. Insisted this was about a video. And I will repeat what I've said over the years. I specifically remember that week because I had filled in for Chris Hayes on Up with Chris Hayes. And I believe it was on the Saturday. They chucked out, like, on whatever day it was, towards the end of the week. We threw out what we were going to do, something domestically, and we ended up doing a foreign policy show about what was going on in the Middle East. And I distinctly remember the graphic that was created, which showed three or four, maybe five different locations, not including Libya, where there were protests, some of which turned violent as a function of that video. And it was, off the top of my head, I can't remember, but it was obviously it was Cairo, but it was at least in three or four other countries where there were protests. I believe one of those countries, we actually had an infiltration of one of our embassy compounds. I believe that may have happened in Cairo, but it also happened at least in one other place, and aside from Benghazi. So the idea that there was no confusion about what was going on is just simply wrong. Now, it's conceivable that the administration may have known. Well, it's quite clear they had information that this was, there was competing information, right? I mean, some of the information was that it was a terrorist attack. Some of the information was that it was tied to the video, and some of the information was that it's not. And the idea that 5 days later that somehow there's something nefarious going on, I don't know. It's just we keep waiting to find out what the scandal that they're hiding is. And I don't think we'll ever know, ladies and gentlemen. But it is going to be interesting to see if this exhausts just everybody. Wow, is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah.
Let's save that for the fun half of the
program. All right. Remember the other thing, though, but we will save that for the fun half.
Yes. Michael wants me to promote that tonight there will be a live recording of We the People Live, hosted by Josh Zepps and featuring Sumita Mukhopadhyay.
Mukhopadhyay. No, you said Mukhopadhyay.
Well, I'm from Massachusetts, and there
Sumita Mukhopadhyay, she's an Indian girl.
Sumita Mukhopadhyay, and Karen Feehan, and more. So they'll be debating political correctness and humor. The location is the Pine Box Rock Shop in Bushwick, Brooklyn. That's at 12 Groton Street. I imagine Michael will put a link up.
You're really not going to say that I'm on the paddle?
Oh, jeez, I'm sorry.
You're amazing.
I had crossed that out. It's hosted by Josh Zepps, and it's featuring Michael Brooks. I was wondering why you were asking me to promote that so heavily.
Right.
So it's We the People
I've been
Live.
Talking about it nonstop.
We the People Live. So check it out if you are in the BK, as we say here. All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. Just a reminder, we rely on your membership. Your support of this program makes this show possible. Without it, we don't do a show. And to thank you, we give you all this extra material where we laugh, we have fun, we mock Trey Gowdy.
We share a new theory about what really led to Benghazi.
Mm-hmm. I'm watching the...
blow the lid off of this.
Watching the committee now, and I got to say that Trey Gowdy seems to be like... I think he is the sweatiest person on that entire panel. Or, to be fair, he may have greased himself down. And I don't know why he would do that.
Figuring out Middle East crisis. Got to brought her up. Get ready.
I don't know if he's wearing...
I need some Breitbart printouts.
Exactly.
I need some Bronner. And I need my misogyny. I got it all. Let's go. Him versus Rubio. Who's more dehydrated?
Well, dehydrated, it's interesting.
Who's more sweaty? Well, yeah, I guess Rubio's dehydrated. Who's more sweaty?
It looks like to me like Trey Gowdy is. And wow. What's weird about it is he's got that thing, and I understand it. I mean, when I was a kid, I think I used to do this when I played a lot of basketball, where he's actually drinking his own sweat. He's actually like licking his lips in such a way to drink his own sweat. Now, you know, look, different strokes for different folks.
This is how bad these hearings are.
I'm just saying, yes, but politically speaking, that's not going to go over. The sweat-drinking Trey Gowdy is just not going to...
You guys let out Moussa Koussa's name? What's the matter with you?
Yes.
You only would have learned that from watching CNN International, Al Jazeera, reading George Tenet's book, or any major news reporting on what was happening in Libya while it was happening.
Maybe you're not supposed to be watching television.
I got to go lick my sweat now.
Exactly,
I am so disturbed.
Also, folks, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. And if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our Amazon link at majorityreportkickback.com. The number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. You can IM me, Majority FM, or via the app, ladies and gentlemen. Also, Dave Zirin on Sportocracy. Go download that episode. You love Dave Zirin, and with good reason. We'll be back in just a moment.